turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It's chapter 8 of the book of Bamidbar in the wilderness, a.k.a. Numbers. And, of course, it starts like this, where it says, "And Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe." And what did he say? He said, "Speak unto Aaron and say unto him." So we're not at the unique words yet. Here we go, though. Beha alotecha, when you light the lamps, the seven lamps shall give light in front of the menorah. And then we're going to hear about the menorah itself, and it says, "And Aaron did so." Now, this is one of those kind of interesting Rashi comments where he says, look, that's redundant, right? Only it's not. There's no idle word in Torah. So what does that mean? It means that Aaron did precisely, exactly, without deviation, what it was he was commanded to do. So that makes sense. Anyway, he lighted the lamps thereof so as to give light in front of the menorah as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. So we see this kind of a consistent theme. It's important that they do these things correctly and as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. This, it says, was the work of the menorah, beaten work of gold under the base thereof, the flowers thereof. It was a beaten work according to the pattern which Yahuwah had shown Moshe. So he made the menorah. And it continues and says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and he said, "Take the Levites from among the Bnei Israel and cleanse them." So we've been talking about the Levites over the last couple of weeks by their tribes, the numbers of the Levites, and the fact that they have specific service in the tabernacle that is allocated to them. So cleanse them. Then here's what you're going to do to them, to cleanse them. Sprinkle the water of purification upon them. Let them cause a razor to pass over all their flesh. So they shave themselves. Let them wash their clothes and cleanse themselves. Then let them take a young bullock and its meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil. Now the young bull you shall take for a chatat, a sin offering. Then you present the Levites. Remember, there's a whole lot of them. Before the tent of meeting. And you shall assemble the whole congregation, kol edat of the Bnei Israel. So we got essentially over 22,000 of these Levites. And of course, the better part of 2.5 million, give or take, of everybody else. So as a percentage, they're a small percentage. Still, it's a lot of folks. So this is a big congregation. Then you shall present the Levites before Yahuwah and the Bnei Israel, and shall lay their hands upon the Levites. So we're going to have a massive hand laying. Aaron then shall offer the Levites before Yahuwah for a wave offering from the Bnei Israel, that they may do the service of Yahuwah. A wave offering. Now, this is kind of interesting. I've always tried to picture what this would look like. There are those that suggest, and we don't know. Remember, a wave offering is generally something that's picked up and held and waved. So there have been those that suggest, and with this many people, I guess it's possible, that they literally hefted up all 22,000 of these folks and waved them before Yahuwah. It would have been quite a sight, I'm sure. The Levites, it says, shall lay their hands upon the heads of the bullocks and offer one for the sin offering, the chatat, the other for a burnt offering, the olah, unto Yahuwah to make atonement for the Levites. Then you shall set the Levites before Aaron, before his sons, and offer them for a wave offering unto Yahuwah. Then you shall separate, thus you shall separate the Levites from among the Bnei Israel. And Levites, he says, are mine. After that, the Levites will go do the service in the tent of meeting, and you shall cleanse them and offer them for a wave offering. So this is the third time we've heard that mentioned. They are holy, he says, given unto me from among the Bnei Israel. Instead of all that opens the womb, the firstborn of all the children of Israel, I have taken these unto me. For all of the firstborn among the Bnei Israel are mine, both of man and of beast. And on the day that I smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, I sanctified them, I set them apart for myself. And he says, now, I have taken the Levites, tachat. There's that word, right? An ayin, tachat ayin. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. We've all heard that. I've talked about this word because it's interesting. It literally doesn't mean like an eye for an eye. Poke his out because he poked somebody else's out. What it means is in place of. So there is an understanding of a measure for measure. But in this case, it makes, at least it's more obvious to folks, he is taking the Levites to chat in place of the firstborn among the Bnei Israel. Now, given the Levites, they are given to Aaron and to his sons from among the Bnei Israel to do the service of the children of Israel in the tent of meeting, to make atonement for the children of Israel, so there's no plague among the Bnei Israel. through the children of Israel coming nigh unto the sanctuary. So they have a job, and their job basically is not just to tote and lift and carry and help move this thing when it comes time to move it. Meanwhile, they're to keep the other people from getting too close to the sanctuary, the tent of meeting, the Mishkan, and causing a plague. So thus did Moshe and Aaron and all of the congregation of the B'nai Israel unto the Levites, according to all that Yahuwah commanded Moshe, touching the Levites, so they did. So did the children of Israel unto them. And the Levites purified themselves, they washed their clothes. Aaron offered them for a sacred gift before Yahuwah, and Aaron made atonement for them to cleanse them. And after that, it says, the Levites went in to do their service, their avodah, in the tent of meeting before Aaron and before his sons, as Yahuwah had commanded Moshe concerning the Levites, so did they unto them. And then we get this part where it says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, that which pertains unto the Levites from 20 up to 20 and 5, so 25 years old and up, they will do this service in the work that they have for them by their tribes in the tent of meeting, the Ohel of the Mishkan. From age 50, though, that's basically when they retire. At that point, they return from the service of that work. They don't serve anymore. But instead, they shall minister with their brethren in the tent of meeting to keep the charge. But they do no manner of service. So they're kind of like elder statesmen, I guess you'd say. They still have a job to do, but it's, I don't know, for some reason I'm thinking it's more like a Walmart greeter. They are the people that are going to essentially do the things that an elder statesman would do. They're going to counsel, and they're going to be there, and they're going to talk to folks. Thus you shall do, and they shall do, unto the Levites, touching all their charges. Okay, chapter 9 says, Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe in Bamidbar Sinai, in the wilderness, in the first month of the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt. And he said the following. Now, wait a second. Let's pause for a second, because this is kind of interesting. This says clearly, he spoke to them in the first month of the second year. Now, wait a minute. Remember how the book began? The book begins with Yahuwah speaking to to Moshe, Bamidbar Sinai, in the tent of meeting, on the first day of the second month in the second year. So what does that say? This is saying what we're hearing now is not in chronological order. And that's something we have to remember in Scripture. Sometimes we don't know for sure. Here's a place where it's telling us, nope, we're backing up in time. This is something that happened before the book began. And so what's it say? Let the children of Israel keep the Passover in its appointed season. So we're going to talk about Pesach, and the suggestion is that this is the only time, Bamidbar, in the wilderness, while they were wandering in the desert, that they actually kept the Passover this way. And remember, there was a whole lot of uncircumcised folk there, so that is at least consistent. I think that's part of the reason, even though we don't have explicit understanding, it sure looks like that might be the case. In the 14th day of this month, first month, at dusk, you shall keep it in its appointed season. According to all the statutes of it, according to all the ordinances of it, you shall keep it. So Moshe spoke unto the B'nai Israel that they should do that, keep the Pesach, and they kept it in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at dusk. Bamidbar Sinai, according to all that Yahuwah commanded Moshe, so they did. So did the children of Israel do. Now, there were certain men, however, and they had been unclean by reason of a dead body. Remember, if they have been unclean, they were close to a dead body, they couldn't keep the Pesach on the day that it was specified, at any rate. So they had a question, obviously. They said, well, we'd like to do that. They came before Moshe and before Aaron on that day. And they said unto him, look, we are unclean by means of this dead body of a man. So why, therefore, are we to be kept back so as not to bring the offering of Yahuwah in the appointed season among the children of Israel? It's a good question. You can appreciate their sincerity. Moshe said to them, well, wait a minute. Y'all hang out here. Stay here that I may go hear in what Yahuwah will command concerning you. So he's going to go ask. And he gets the answer. Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and said, speak unto the children of Israel and say to them. Right. If any man of you, of any of your generations, shall be at this time unclean by reason of a dead body, or maybe he's on a journey afar off, yet he shall keep the Passover to Yahuwah. In the second month, on the 14th day, they shall keep it. They eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Now, we're going to get a brief recap of what they're going to do, but what he's being told here is they do it 1 month later. They're gone. They're unclean at the time when it would normally be kept. They do it a month later. They shall leave none of the offering. They eat it with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Leave none until morning. Don't break a bone. According to the statutes of the Pesach, that's how they'll do it. But the man that's clean, somebody doesn't have that excuse. They're not on a journey. And they don't decide to keep the Passover. That soul shall be cut off from his people because he did not bring the offering of Yahuwah in its appointed season. That man shall bear his own sin. Now, if there's a stranger who sojourns among you, he'd like to keep the Pesach unto Yahuwah according to the statute of the Pesach, according to the ordinance of it. Well, he can do that. He shall. You shall have one statute, echat. So it's hucha echat. One statute, both for you and for the stranger and for him that is born in the land. On the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the Mishkan, even the tent of the testimony, and at evening there was upon the tabernacle, as it was, the appearance of fire until morning. So it was always. The cloud covered it, and the appearance of fire by night. Now, whenever the cloud was taken up from over the tent, then the children of Israel would journey, and the place where the cloud abode, that's where they camped. At the commandment of Yahuwah, it says, and this is basically a repetition, so we understand these are synonyms. This is the same thing. The cloud moves. This is the commandment of Yah. They are essentially simultaneous. Well, then the children of Israel journeyed. At the commandment of Yahuwah, they camped. And as long as the cloud abode upon the Mishkan, well, that's where they stayed. They remained encamped. When the cloud tarried a number of days, then the children of Israel kept the charge of Yahuwah. They did not journey. Sometimes the cloud was just a few days there on the tabernacle. According to the commandment of Yahuwah, they remained encamped. And according to the commandment of Yahuwah, they journeyed. So it's becoming very clear. When they stayed, and he told them to stay, they did. And when he told them to go, they went. Sometimes the cloud was from evening till morning. And when the cloud was taken up in the morning, they journeyed. Or if it continued by day and by night, when it was taken up, they journeyed. Whether it was 2 days or a month or a year that the cloud tarried upon the Mishkan, abiding thereon, the B'nai Israel remained encamped, and they did not journey. But when it was taken up, they did. So over and over, it's making this point. When it moves, they move. When they stay, it's because he's told them to stay, and the cloud stays. At the commandment of Yahuwah, they encamped. And at the commandment of Yahuwah, they journeyed. They kept the charge of Yahuwah at the commandment of Yahuwah by the hand of Moshe. Do you catch the theme? This idea that keeps getting repeated, at the command of Yahuwah, as he commanded, so they did, is vital. The next chapter, chapter 10, says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and here's what he said. Make yourself two trumpets out of kesef, silver. Now, and obviously in this case, it could be make yourself some trumpets out of money, because it's the same word in Hebrew, but it's really silver, which is money. They're going to be made out of beaten work. And they'll be unto you for calling of the congregation and for causing the camps to set forward. So essentially, the cloud moves, it's time to move. But as far as the procedure, how it's done, it's going to tell us here how the silver trumpets are used to make that happen, to essentially organize the packing up, head them up, moving out kind of a thing. When they blow with them, all of the congregation shall gather them up to you at the door of the tent of meeting. So we're going to have various signals. If they blow but with one trumpet, well, then it's the princes, the heads of the thousands of Israel that gather unto you. But when they blow an alarm, a teruah, that's the staccato 9 times blast, the camps that lie on the east side, remember we start with the sunrise side, that's Moshe and his folks, and then all those on the east side, the three sets of the tribes there, they take their journey. Then when you blow an alarm the second time, it's the camps to the south, they will set off. And then you blow alarm for their journeys. When the assemblies be gathered together, you blow, but you shall not sound the alarm. And the sons of Aaron, the Kohanim, they shall blow with the trumpets. And they shall be to you a statute forever throughout your generation. So there's that word again, lehuchat olam. When you go to war in your land against the adversary that oppresses you, then you shall sound an alarm with the trumpets. And you shall be remembered before Yehuyarel, and you shall be saved from your enemies. Also, in the day of your gladness, your appointed seasons, Moedim, your new moons, you'll blow out the trumpets over your burnt offerings, over the sacrifices of your shalamim, your peace offerings. They shall be to you a memorial before your El. And then he signs this one, Ani Yahuwah Elohechem. And then it says it came to pass in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th day of the month. So this is after the Passover and after the time that was allotted for the men that didn't make it the first time around. 20th day of the month, the cloud was taken up from over the tabernacle of the testimony. So the B'nai Israel set out, they set forward by their stages from out of the wilderness of Sinai. And the cloud abode in the wilderness of Paran. And they took their first journey, according to the commandment of Yahuwah, by the hand of Moshe. And here we're going to get a recap, and it's interesting, if you go through this, and I can remember having done it, made some notes in my margin here, we're going to see the listing of the 12 tribes and the leadership. And the first place, the standard of the camp, remember, it's Judah that's on the east side, they set forward. Over his host was Nachshon, son of Amminadab. Over the host of the tribe of Issachar, number two in the parade, was Nathaniel, son of Zuar. Remember, he is the fellow that was on the second day to bring his offering too. These are the same leaders that we saw in chapter 7 throughout this. Over the host of the tribe of Zebulun, Eliab, son of Helon, the tabernacle was taken down at that point. The sons of Gershon and the sons of Merari, who bore the tabernacle, they set forward. And the standard of the camp of Reuben then set forward according to their hosts. Over him, that host was Elitzur, son of Shedur. Over the host of Simeon, Shalumiel, son of Zuri Deshai. Over the host of the third in that set, Gad, was Eliasaph, son of Deuel. And then the Kohathites, the bearers of the sanctuary, set forward, that the tabernacle might be set up, the Mishkan, against their coming. So we see the process, and this is what's kind of fascinating. They start out by camps, and as this is going on, then the tabernacle itself is taken down, and then it moves out, and when the Kohathites go out, they're the bearers of the main parts of what's in there. The standard of the camp of the children of Ephraim then set forward according to their host, and over them, Elishama, son of Amihud. Then the tribe of Manasseh, and it was Gamaliel, son of Pedazur, that was their head. Over the tribe of the children of Benjamin, Abidan, son of Gideoni. Finally, the standard of the camp of Dan, which was the rearward of all the camps, set forward according to their host. So first, Dan was led by Ahiezer, son of Amidashai. Then the next one in that group was Asher, led by Pagiel, son of Ochran. And finally, over the host of the children of Naphtali was Ahira, son of Enan. These, it says, were the journeys of the B'nai Israel according to their hosts, and they set forward. Now, then we get this interesting, and I would say, this is one of those things that the sages have discussed. People that have read it will note a couple of things about it. Who are we talking about here exactly, and who is whom? And there is argument about it. Moshe then said to a fellow named Hobab, okay, or it's actually Hobab, the son of Reuel, the Midianite. Comma, in English we get the comma, we don't in the Hebrew, right? Moshe's father-in-law. So, who is Moshe's father-in-law? Is it this fella that's Hobab, or is it Reuel the Midianite we're talking about? Now, in general, by the way, this is one of the reasons why I sometimes joke about this fella Yitro, Jethro. He perhaps is described by more names in Scripture than just about anybody else. We know he is a priest of the Midianites. So it may be, and this is the way I tend to read it, but I can't prove it, and obviously there's lots of discussion. It's Reuel the Midianite that is also, a.k.a., also known as Yitro, Moshe's father-in-law. Okay, that would mean that Hobab is his son. That would be like a brother of Zipporah. So, in other words, Hobab would be Moshe's brother-in-law. That's my take. Your mileage may vary. Other folks would suggest, no, it's the other way around. But in any case, we are journeying unto the place of which Yahuwah said, I'll give you, come on down with us, we'll do you good. For Yahuwah has spoken good concerning Israel. Now remember, we were told that Yitro was there. It sounded like he left, and that's why it makes more sense to me that this Hobab is his son, who has come back in the interim. And he said unto him, I'm not going to go, but I'll depart to my own land, to my own kindred. Okay, yeah, that sounds familiar. Then he said, don't leave us, I pray you, because as much as you know how we are in camp in the wilderness, and you'll be to us instead of eyes. In other words, we could use your help as a guide here. So it shall be, if you go with us, it shall be that whatsoever Yahuwah does unto us, the same we will do unto you. In other words, you'll share in our blessings. So they set forward from the mount of Yahuwah, 3 days' journey. The Ark of the Covenant of Yahuwah went before them, 3 days' journey, to seek out a resting place for them. And the cloud of Yahuwah was over them by day when they set forward from the camp. Now, here is the end of the chapter, and it's also another one of these fascinating things that are described as the, well, if you remember in Matthew, Yahushua says not one yod or tittle, not any tiny part of the Torah, the prophets, the instruction is going to change, as long as heaven and earth still exist. What's interesting is this section is set off with one of the most famous of the jots and the tittles in the book. And as is usually the case, we do not see them in the English renderings. They don't put the English. The English doesn't put these jots and tittles in there, but these are called the inverted noons. So this is like a bracket that is an open bracket. It's a bracket that faces right. And what that is said to do, it's the only place in Scripture where we see this, is to set these last two verses off. In other words, it sets them off and it makes them special somehow. It's exactly what it is. It's subject to a lot of discussion. But I won't argue that somehow or other this is special. It also is one of those things that makes sense it would be somewhat special. As a matter of fact, you'll see a lot of the commentators will call this the book never written. And I've always thought that was interesting. The book never written. But in any case, it says this, within the inverted noons. Okay? This happens when they set forward from the camp. It came to pass when the ark set forward, Moshe said, "Arise, O Yahuwah, and let your enemies be scattered. Let them that hate you flee from before you." And then when it rested, he said, "Return, O Yahuwah, unto the 10,000s of the families of Israel." So it is a fascinating, certainly a reasonably well-known, and for that reason, phrase. Rise up and let your enemies be scattered. Let those that hate you flee from before you when they headed out. And when they rested, return, O Yahuwah, unto the 10,000s of the families of Israel. Now, chapter 11, we're going to get a change of venue and kind of a little bit more of a negative understanding as well. One more time, we're hearing that the children of Israel, the people here, it says, Ha'am, they were murmurers. And as you know, I like the modern English understanding. They were whiners, complainers. They were speaking evil, it says, in the ears of Yahuwah. Now, that doesn't sound so good. Whether they're whiners or complainers or murmurers, this is not good. And you can guess that it's not going to work well. When Yahuwah heard it, his anger was kindled. And it says the fire of Yahuwah burned among them and devoured the outermost part of the camp. Outermost part of the camp. So those were the tribes that would have been on the outside. There is a midrash. I'm not sure if I buy this or not. And it says, because we don't know this for sure, but it's part of the lore. In other words, it's oral tradition. Take it with a grain of salt. That on the outside of the camp was some of the mixed multitude, some of the folks that weren't of the various tribes. I don't see that explicitly in Scripture, but in any case, the outside of the camp was the part that was devoured by this fire. People then, they cried unto Moshe, and Moshe prayed unto Yahuwah, and the fire abated. All right, so far so good. The name of that place was called Taberah, because the fire of Yahuwah burned among them. So the mixed multitude that was among them then fell a-lusting. That doesn't sound good either. And the children of Israel wept on their own part, and they said, "Oh, we sure wish we were given flesh to eat. We remember all the good fish which we were wont to eat in Egypt. It didn't cost us anything. It was free fish. The cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic. All this good stuff. Now, though, our soul is just plain dried away. We got nothing to eat at all save this manna to look to." And at this point, there's two things that are interesting. One is the text. The text says, tell us a little bit about the manna. The manna was like coriander seed. The appearance thereof was of the appearance of bdellium. Okay? Sounds like it's perfectly acceptable stuff. That seems to be what they're saying. And people went around and they would gather it and they ground it up in mills, they beat it in mortars, they seethed it in pots, they made cakes out of it. So lots of good stuff. This is kind of a versatile food. You can do all kinds of good stuff with it. And the taste of it was like the taste of a cake baked with oil. Now here is where there is a bit of a midrash and a little bit of a again of the oral tradition. The oral tradition says, and this at least kind of makes sense because it's a little bit of human nature, says that those folks that were not complainers and that were thankful for the blessing that this manna was, they after all ate it for years in the wilderness, that they thought it tasted pretty good. But if people were whining and complaining about it, they tended to think it didn't taste very good at all. They got kind of bored with it. And, again, that's, if nothing else, that makes sense because it is a bit of human nature. So those that didn't like it to begin with were the ones that got bored with it the fastest and were the whiners. And it turns out that was like taking the poison poke. It was a way to guarantee a relatively shorter lifespan. When the dew fell upon the camp in the night, manna came and it fell upon it. Moshe heard the people weeping. Listen to this. Here's the description. Weeping family by family, every man at the door of his tent. That sounds like it was pretty pervasive whining. And the anger of Yahuwah was kindled greatly, and Moshe wasn't happy about it either. He was displeased. So Moshe said unto Yahuwah, why have you dealt ill with your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight, that you lay the burden of all this people upon me? So Moshe is going to do a little whining of his own. Have I conceived this people? Right? Did I do this? Have I brought them forth, that you should say unto me, carry them in your bosom, as a nursing father carries a suckling child, unto the land which you did swear to their fathers? Wow. Why then should I have flesh to give to all this people? For they trouble me with their weeping, saying, give us flesh so we can eat. Now remember, folks, and this is another bit of the Midrash. The people do have animals. We got some noise here all of a sudden. See if we can stop that. Wow. Okay, so the people do have animals, and if they wanted to, they could eat some of those. Obviously, there may be a concern about these animals are supposed to be preserved for sacrifices, for offerings, and so forth. And maybe they just thought, well, we got to hang on to them until we get to the land. We're going to need them there. So I can not blame them for not wanting to eat them until they get there, because they are, in fact, a precious commodity that they've been hanging on to. Still, though, Moshe is asking, well, where am I going to get all this flesh for these folks to eat? They keep wanting to complain about it. I just plain can't handle it. I'm not able to bear all this for myself alone because it's just too heavy for me. Now, if this is how you're going to deal with me, he says, kill me, I pray, out of hand. And if I found favor in your sight, let me not look upon my own wretchedness. So Yahuwah then said unto Moses, gather unto me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be the elders of the people, and officers over them, and bring them into the tent of meeting, that they can stand there with you. And I'll come on down, and I'll speak with you there, and I will take of that spirit which is upon you, and I will put it upon them. We saw this with the prophets, too. Eliyahu, and a double portion that was put on Elisha, of his spirit. So that's going to happen here, it sounds like. He's going to take some men, 70 men, elders of the tribes, and they're going to gather them up, and a portion of Moshe's spirit will be put on them. And they will help. They will bear the burden of the people with you, and you will not have to bear it to yourself all alone. Now you say thus unto the people, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow. And y'all, you're going to have some flesh. Oh yeah. For you have wept in the ears of Yahuwah, saying, we sure wish we had flesh to eat, because it was so great there back when we were slaves in Egypt. Therefore, Yahuwah is going to give you flesh. Oh yeah. You will eat. And this is one of those things where if you keep whining and asking for it, folks, you may get it, and it may not be exactly what you wanted. And by the way, he says, you're not just going to eat for one day, not 2 days, not 5 days, not 10 days, not 20 days. No, a whole month till it comes out of your nostrils, and it'll become loathsome to you, do you think? Because you have rejected Yahuwah, who is among you. You've troubled him with all your whining and your weeping, saying, why now had we ever come forth out of Egypt? We've heard all of this before. And Moshe said, the people among whom I am, there are 600,000 men on foot. Remember the number 603,550, 603,550. So he says, over 600,000, that's a whole lot of folks. And yet you have said among them flesh, that they may eat a whole month. So Moshe, at this point, is starting to think about the logistics. Right? How are we going to get this much meat? For crying out loud, that's a whole lot of meat. That's wagon loads and wagon loads. If the flocks and herds were slain for them, would that be enough? Would that suffice? Or if all the fish of the sea were gathered together for them, will that be enough for them? Then Yahuwah said unto Moshe, and this is a put down. Is Yahuwah's hand waxed short? Just hang in there. Now you'll see whether my word shall come to pass unto you or not. I guess on the rebuke scale, that's a pretty minor one. So Moshe went out. He told the people the words of Yahuwah, and he gathered 70 men of the elders of the people. He set them round about the ohel, the tent. Then Yahuwah came down in the cloud, spoke to him. He took of the spirit that was upon Moshe, and he put it on those 70 elders, and it came to pass, when the spirit rested upon them, they prophesied. But they did so no more. So they did it briefly. Now, we got this issue, and this is described in the next verse here. If you think about it, how is he going to do this? He's going to get these elders. Well, we got 12 tribes. I take 6 men from each of the 12 tribes, half a dozen each. That's 72 men. Well, we need 70. So what are we going to do here? So it sounds like what they did, one way or the other, they drew lots and they left 2 men out. The others are of the 70. So there remain, it says in verse 26, these 2 men in the camp. The name of one was Eldad. The name of the other, Medad. Now, when I look at this and I'm thinking, you know, this was not a great dishonor to be left out. These two guys are named in Scripture, and that's obviously more than sufficient compensation for not being part of the 70, it would seem. The Spirit rested on them too, and they were of them that were recorded, but had not gone out under the tent, and instead, it says, they prophesied in the camp. So they did the prophesying back in the camp. And there ran a young man, and the young man basically rats him out to Moshe. He's upset about this. He says, hey, check it out. Eldad and Medad, they're prophesying in the camp. Joshua, son of Nun, the minister of Moshe from his youth on up, answered and said, my lord Moshe, hey, shut him in. So Joshua seems to think this could be a problem too, but he's wrong. Moshe then says to him, are you jealous for my sake? Would that all of the people of Yahuwah were prophets, that Yahuwah would put his spirit upon them. He thinks this is a great thing. Don't be complaining about it. So Moshe withdrew unto the camp, he and the elders of Israel. And now it says, here comes a wind from Yahuwah. And it brought quails from across the sea. So quails are shleem. And they fell by the camp. And he let them fall around all over the camp. About a day's journey on a side, day's journey on the other side. There's quail, in other words, all over the place, all around the camp, and about 2 cubits above the face of the earth. So this is the ground is literally littered with quail. People rose up all that day. Oh, look at all the quail. Wow, go get them. All night, the next day, they gathered quails. He that gathered the least gathered 10 heaps of quails. And they spread them all abroad for themselves round about the camp. Oh, baby, we got quail, we got quail. We're having a quail fest here. And while the flesh was still yet between their teeth, before they even chewed it, the anger of Yahuwah was kindled against the people, and Yahuwah smote the people with a very great plague. A bird flu. No, this was real bird flu. Whatever it was, folks, the name of that place was named for it. It was called Kibrot Hata'ava, because there they buried... This was the grave of the people that lusted. So they lusted, and it was their grave. From Kibrot Hata'ava, the people journeyed then unto Hazarot, and there they abode, at Hazarot. So it sounds like at Hazarot we're going to get another story of somebody who would have probably been better off keeping silent. This is the final chapter of the Parsha, and it says, now we got Moshe... Moshe's brother and sister, Miriam and Aaron. And they spoke against Moshe. So if there's any question, were they doing something they shouldn't have done or not, the story's going to answer it. They spoke against Moshe because of the Cushite woman whom he'd married. In fact, he had married a Cushite woman, an Ethiopian woman. That would be the modern understanding of what Cush is and where those people are. So Moshe has taken a second wife. There is a lot of discussion. What happened with Zipporah? Is she there? Is she not there? Did he put her away? But regardless, what's the problem? We're not told what the issue was with the Cushite woman. And again here, there's a lot of places in this parsha where there's midrash and discussion. And it's interesting. I tend to think, while we've heard a lot of the variants, some of them make more sense than others. So, he'd married a Cushite. Now they said, has Yahuwah indeed only spoken with Moshe? Hasn't he also spoken with us? And Yahuwah heard it. So here's the dilemma right off the top. Something is going on here. Moshe is being spoken against by his brother and his sister. That much we know. We also know that he had married a Cushite woman. And the reason why it says they spoke against him had something to do with this Cushite woman. Now, there are some folks that say, oh, it's because the Cushite woman, Ethiopian, she might have been black. I don't buy that for a second. I don't think that's the reason. But there may be some other reasons here that at least have a little more scriptural understanding. And then this doesn't seem to have as much to do with it. But in a way it does, and that's at least how I resolve it. Your mileage may vary. You don't have to go there. But at least the explanation I will offer, I think, makes some sense. Okay, what has this got to do with the issue of he's taken this wife? Has Yahuwah indeed spoken only with Moshe? Hadn't he spoken with us? Now, then we get this aside. And by the way, this is written by Moshe, and he says, the man Moshe was very meek. The word here, anav. Anav. Meek. What does that mean? Well, some people would say it's humble. I tend to think another way of looking at humble, and this has been the way I've thought of it for a number of years. You can disagree if you'd like. But I like the idea of somebody who's humble is teachable. And that certainly seems to be apropos with Moshe. We see that in his character. But whatever this word meek or anav means, Moshe was like this above all the men, it says, that were upon the face of the earth. Now, note too that this word anav, this is the first use in Scripture. So whatever it means, well, Moshe kind of defines it. Now, Yahuwah then spoke, here's an interesting word, suddenly unto Moshe, and unto Aaron, and unto Miriam. What has this got to do with it? And why does it put that word suddenly in there? Come on out here to the tent of meeting. So the three of them came out. Yahuwah came down in a pillar of cloud. He stood at the door of the tent, and he called Aaron and Miriam, and they both came on over. And he says, hear now my words. Now let's pause. Okay, he's going to call them out. He is now going to tell them something, which is obviously very important, and it clearly has to do with the problem that's going on here. But the question is, how do these pieces fit together? And I will contend that there's one word in here which is kind of interesting that we don't very often see. Yahuwah spoke suddenly unto Moshe and unto Aaron and Miriam. All right, well, a bit of background. Remember when Yahuwah was going to speak to Moshe, one of the things that he would do was refrain from sexual relations with his wife. When he was going to go up to Mount Sinai, he told those folks, remember, y'all just hang back from your wives before this. So I can't help but think, and this is at least some of the Midrash points this out as well, maybe what they were complaining about is that Moshe had taken this new Cushite wife, and there was a problem. He had married a Cushite woman, and they spoke against him. But why? We're not told why. Unless it has something to do with what we're seeing here. Because remember, Moshe essentially should do the conjugal duties, and maybe he is refraining from doing what he might ought to do for his new wife because he's worried that Yahuwah might come suddenly and he has to go into the tent of meeting and he's not ready. Again, I can't prove that. I don't know that. But I do think that the use of the word suddenly in here is kind of interesting because the implication seems to be if Aaron and Miriam, oops, if they had not been refraining themselves, if they were in fact whatever it was they were complaining to Moshe about with respect to this Cushite woman, now there's a lesson being taught to them. Okay, so they came down to the tent of meeting. Right, that's all we're told, folks. So I can't say anything more other than the connection of the dots that seem to be here. But as I like to point out, I can't prove it. Your mileage may vary. But at least it's kind of interesting. And, of course, the idea of Midrash is we talk about these things and we see what makes sense. And over time, I think the discussion itself is valuable. Because it kind of lends us an ability to think about what these people were doing, put ourselves in their position, see if some of the things that are said then make more sense. And that certainly applies to this next part, too. So Yahuwah speaks to them. He stood at the door. They both came over. He said, hear now my words. Now we're going to get a little bit of a dissertation on prophets in these next couple of verses. Look, he says, if there's a prophet among you, I, Yahuwah, do make myself known to him in a vision. That's normally what we see. Prophets, they have a vision. Yahuwah speaks to them. I speak with him in a dream. So standard operating procedure, SOP for prophets is Yahuwah talks to them in a dream or a vision. Now, that's not the way it is with Moshe, though. Understand this. Moses is different. He is trusted in all my house. My servant Moshe is not like the rest of the prophets. Uh-uh. He's something special. With him, and it sounds like what he's saying is with him only, do I speak mouth to mouth, even manifestly, and not in dark speeches, and the similitude of Yahuwah does he behold. He sees, he hears, it's a special relationship. All right, you get the picture? So therefore, he says, why, oh why, were you not afraid to speak against my servant, against Moshe? Well, it's our brother. Yeah, but you should at least be aware of the fact that he's different than any other prophet. And the anger of Yahuwah, it says, was kindled against them. Uses the plural here, them. So it sounds like it's both Miriam and Aaron. And he departed. Okay? So there's the setup. And then it says this. When the cloud had departed from over the tent, behold, Miriam is a Metzorah. The text literally says, she is Metzorah. She has now been, it looks like, afflicted with this thing that we, remember, it's not leprosy, it's Zara'at. She has it. Her skin is white as snow. Aaron looked at her, and behold, she was, in fact, a Metzorah. Oh, man. Aaron then says to his brother Moshe, oh, my Lord, do not, I pray you, lay on me this sin upon us, for what we have done is foolish. All right, we've done foolishly. We have, in fact, sinned. So he gets it. He immediately says, we have repented here. So, by the way, let her not, I pray, be as someone who is dead, of whom the flesh is literally half consumed when he comes out of his mother's womb. She looks awful. I don't like this at all. We are sorry. We ain't going to do it no more. Moshe, then, he takes compassion, it sounds like. He cried unto Yahuwah, and he said, heal her now! O Elohim, I beseech you. Now, remember, the Ruach that we've just been talking about, the presence has departed. But Yahuwah then says to Moshe, just making clear what he's already told him, I speak to Moshe mouth to mouth. Yahuwah said to Moshe, look, if her father had just plain spit in her face, well then shouldn't she hide her shame? Shouldn't she hide in that shame for a full week, for 7 days? So, let her be shut outside the camp for 7 days. After that, you can bring her on back in. So they did. Miriam was shut up outside the camp for 7 days. The people did not journey until Miriam was brought in again. Now, there's a bit of grace here. The sages will point out, you know, if Yah was really angry, he could have said, come on, head him up, move him out, and left her behind. He did not. The cloud stayed for that 7 days till Moshe and Aaron were able to bring her back into the camp. Now, there's a question here which has already come up. Everybody's probably thinking it. It said them, when it says they were guilty. Why is it that it's just Miriam and not Aaron that is afflicted with Zara'at? Interesting. Now, maybe there is an implication because she is a woman. Maybe it's because Aaron is the high priest and he's in a different situation. Truth of the matter is, we don't know. Scripture doesn't tell us, so I am not want to speculate if we don't have at least some indication. All we know for sure is they both seem to have spoken against him, but the quotations, let me just make sure this is correct, it says, they said, has Yahuwah indeed spoken only with Moshe? Has he not also spoken with us? Notice the plural. So the quotes are not attributed to Miriam alone. And they both get called, but and yet she is the one that is singled out for being a Metzorah. So afterward, they journeyed and they pitched in the wilderness of Paran.